pleasure to introduce Danielle from Santa Maria, California.
Oh, okay. I'm Danielle, and I'm an alcoholic. And I think of all these things I'm going to say, and as soon as she said my name, I went full length. My sobriety date is January 19th, 2001. And for those of you that aren't too good at math, that's 5,314 days. And somebody said, that's not important. And I said, you know, it is to me, though, because that's exactly what saved me and how we do this program is just one day at a time. And when I first got here, I remember coming to this birthday meeting the first time, and people had like 3 years and 5 years, and I was sitting over here with Dorothy D., who passed away last year with almost 60 years sobriety. She was in her 90s, and awesome lady. And I said, oh my God, how do people stay sober for 5 years? And she said, honey, you just don't worry about, she goes, you just stay sober today and the years will take care of themselves. So that's what I try to do is just not drink one day at a time and do what's suggested of me. I'll go back a little bit. I was raised in a, pretty much by June and Ward Cleaver, you know, a mom and dad and the two kids and the dog and the cat. And, you know, now as I have aged and gotten more serenity and sobriety, I see some dysfunction there. But, you know, I had a happy childhood and my parents weren't alcoholics. They still aren't. But my sister is, and she has been in recovery. I think she had about 13 years when I got sober, so I don't know. She may be pushing 30 years now, but, you know, I remembered from the first time I ever had a drink, you know, as I got into this program, I started thinking about it. I never had one drink. My parents had one drink or a drink at cocktail hour. That was a big thing. It's 5 o'clock, happy hour. They had a drink and maybe a glass of wine with dinner, and that was it. And that's how my husband drinks. He drinks one drink or two, and that's it. And I don't ever remember ever stopping. If I had one, I just sipped away till bedtime. And for a lot of years, you know, alcohol worked for me. You know, it was a weekend thing. It probably started in high school, somewhere junior, senior year, because I wanted to fit in, because the popular kids went to parties and drank, and I wanted to fit in. So I went to the parties with them and drank, but it was like once a week, you know. Then I went off to college, and I was actually at a bar. I don't know how I got in. And I was 18 and a half or 19, and I was on the dance floor, and I looked down, and this gift from God's right there on the dance floor, a ID. And she was 5'6", blonde hair, blue eyes. She was 21 years old, whoever lost this ID. And so that took care of me till I was 21. And, you know, other than wanting to, like, waking up feeling queasy and having a headache, you know, alcohol for a lot of years didn't get me into a lot of trouble. I didn't black out. I never got arrested. I should have gotten a lot of DUIs. And, you know, I didn't slur a whole lot and fall down. I mean, a little, I'd get slurry if I had a lot to drink. I think my husband's mother got the brunt of that. She's probably the only one that would answer the phone late at night. But it just worked for a lot of times. And there was a lot of alcoholism in extended family. So I knew what alcoholic was. And but I still had all the yes. And I remember that I don't drink in the morning and I don't hide it. Therefore, I'm not an alcoholic. And, you know, I don't remember a magic day or a magic instance when I crossed that invisible line. But at the end, I was hiding it everywhere, and I was drinking in the morning. You know, and my whole drunkalogue is if I was awake, I was drinking. And I kept it, you know, handy. I always had it. I had it hidden everywhere. When my babies would go to sleep, I'd run around the house, find all the hidden bottles, refill them out of the big vodka bottle, and then go hide the big empty vodka bottles in the neighbor's trash so the trash man wouldn't know that how much vodka I was drinking, or wine bottles, or my husband. And, you know, it just got so disgusting. When my twins were born, I was nursing them, and so I'd get up, you know, a lot at night, and it was like, well, if we're awake, it's a party, so I'd have a drink, you know, we're getting up, we're going to feed them, so I'll have a drink. And at about 4 months, the last of the twins, my son, started sleeping through the night, but my body was still waking up at 3, 4, at 4 in the morning. I'd wake up shaking, and I had to have a drink so that I could stop the shaking long enough to go back to sleep and finish sleeping through the night. And, you know, even though I talk about, you know, I didn't black out, I didn't get arrested, you know, I didn't kill anybody, I didn't steal a car, I have a lot of yets. I still had the husband and the, you know, kids in the house. Turns out my husband was not as happy as I thought he was. I went, you know, in rehab, I'm like, I'm so happily married. My husband, we're so happy. And, you know, at one of the family sessions, he says, we need to talk, you know. I'm not happy and I haven't been, and things are going to change. And they did. And that got my attention. That got my attention because I waited, you know, 33 years to find my Prince Charming. And I adore this man. And I did not want to lose him. You know, he's a great dad and a great husband. And I have been very fortunate because of Alcoholics Anonymous to still be married to the same man for over 22 years now, or 20 years now. God, I got numbers going. Ugh. 20 years it was in March. Wasn't it? Or 19? Yeah, it was 20. That's my mother-in-law. I don't know. A long time, but it's all good. So anyhow, my routine was I would wake up 4 in the morning, have a drink, go stop the shaking, go back to sleep. But then in the morning when I would get up, I was really sick at the end. I would, you know, throw up, sip my vodka, throw up, sip my vodka, looking in the mirror with this pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization, and until I could keep enough vodka down to stop the throwing up, you know. And my bottom came, you know, it had gotten so bad, the addiction, the physical addiction for me, that I hit that place where the jumping off point, where I couldn't imagine going on like this, drinking. I couldn't imagine life with it, and I couldn't imagine life without it, you know, and I didn't know what to do. And I called my husband home from work, and again, I'm having a panic attack. That was my thing. I was having a panic attack. My physical had shown that my liver was shutting down. They wanted to do all these expensive tests. I knew why. I was mixing acetaminophen and alcohol, and lots of both. So anyhow, we called my sister. They put me in the hospital to detox for 5 days, and then I went to this 30-day program. And I remembered thinking how different I was than these people, than you people. I was just so different. You know, I hadn't blacked out. I hadn't got arrested. I didn't have any tattoos then, and I can't say that for very much longer, I hope. And I hadn't been to jail. You know, I was fatter, I was more educated, I was skinnier, I was just different in every way I could think of. And a lot of the stories that people shared were about blacking out or about their DUIs, and I couldn't relate to that really. I just drank a lot, and I was very physically addicted. And one Friday night, they had the Gucci meeting. I was down in Santa Barbara at a rehab. In fact, Billy was he drove the druggy buggy around for us, driving to meetings. We called it the druggy buggy. And there was a gal that got up there, and she was the boss's wife, and she hadn't blacked out, and she hid it all up. She was me, and she told my story. And that's, you know, why I share my story. My story may be very different than some of yours, but my addiction to alcohol, the pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization, that hopelessness, seemingly hopeless state of body and mind, that's all the same. And they taught me to look for the similarities, not the differences. And that is what was so important for me, because I could sit all day long and find the differences, and I wanted to, because quite frankly, when I got here, I wasn't sure I didn't want to ever drink again. You know, I was, the thought of spending, you know, watching you guys take cakes for 20, 30 years, that was not attractive to me at all. I had no intentions of not having a glass of wine for that long. I wanted to detox. I wanted to quit craving it. I wanted to quit thinking about it all the time. And I just wanted it to, and then I would, you know, go to meetings here and there. But then I wanted to learn how to drink on Friday night, you know, or have a glass of wine with my salmon, and that was it, you know. And coming back over and over, I heard the things like, you know, I never remembered having just one. If I had one, I had to keep going. If the wedding was at 11 a.m. and I happened to start at 11 a.m., even back in the day when alcohol wasn't, you know, I wasn't making me so ill, I still had to sip until bedtime. I just drank till I was done for the day, in more ways than one. And, you know, in the rehab, I thought it was a hellhole, and I was, I didn't want to go, but I had three babies at home in diapers, and my home was my bar. My home was where I drank, and they had convinced my husband and apparently me that I really need to be removed from my environment for a while. And that, you know, now I realize what a gift and what a blessing that was for me to be able to do, is to remove me from that and learn the things. And the stuff I learned isn't from all the money you spent at the rehab. I'll save you all about $10,000, or I don't know, it's probably more now. They give you a big book until you go to meetings. So there, you have the secret. And at the meetings is where I learned that we don't say we're never going to drink again. We just say we don't drink today. We just don't drink today. And the years will take care of themselves. And I can do today what I couldn't do forever. Never drinking was unattractive to me. It was too long. I mean, it was so easy for me to just get the efforts and say, I can't do this forever, so I'm just going to drink, you know. And I haven't had to relapse since I got to Alcoholics Anonymous in January of 2001. And it's not because I was, you know, the lucky one, or not because I'm anything any different than any of you. It's because I listened. Well, I'm not a good listener, but I did what was suggested in rehab. And the things that I say in rehab, but all they do is take us to meetings. So it was in the meetings that I learned this stuff in Santa Barbara. And, you know, they said, go to meetings. They said, get a sponsor. You know, work the steps. Don't drink a day at a time. Read your book. You know, all that stuff I learned in the meetings and in the rooms. And, you know, there was 20 of us there. And people would shoot out these stupid statistics, you know, 1 in 10 will make it. And I was like, oh, you know, that's discouraging. And the fact of the matter was, 5 years later, there was 2 of us out of 20 that were still sober. And, you know, the difference was, because I would talk to a lot of them, and the first few that went out, it crushed me. And I thought, we're going to be different, because here, I'm different, right? So we're all going to be different, because we went to all this therapy, and we had acupuncture, and we had art therapy, and, you know, we learned all this stuff. So we're not going to have that statistic. We're going to get together. We were going to have our own meetings, you know. That's what we needed, right? 20 newcomers running a meeting. And so we had this pact shocked, you know, and we were close and we had all this training or whatever we had. And, you know, one of the gal that was my roommate, they brought her in, they put me in my own room for a little while because they said I was a little high maintenance and it would be better for me, thank God. And they brought her in like at 1:30 in the morning. They said, oh, she just got out of jail at midnight. And I thought, why the hell would you leave jail at midnight? Can't you just wait till the morning? You know, now I've learned that that's like when they do that. But, and she had been there a lot of times. She had tattoos everywhere. She, I mean, her story was so different than mine. It was unbelievable. And we realized how much we had in common and how similar we were, you know, because it's what's in here, you know. It's not what's out there. It's what's in here and what's in here. And we got very close. And she would call me. She'd relapse, and she'd call me, and she'd say, oh, I guess you were the lucky one. You know, one in ten, you were the lucky one. And I remember once after I hung up the phone, I got so pissed, and I called her back. I go, this isn't a freaking lottery. You know, I didn't win the raffle. I said, I did what they told me to do. And I would say, meet me at a meeting. And I'd get to the meeting, and she wouldn't be there. And that happened a million times. But you know what? I was there, and I stayed sober. You know, I did what was suggested, and if you're thinking you're different, that you don't take direction well, and you don't do what, you don't tell me what to do, I was the same way. Don't tell me what to do, you know. But I wanted my kids, I wanted to live, and I was just dazed from death. My liver, they checked me in, it was 280, and it's something like at 230 you're supposed to be in a coma, and at 200 you're in a coma, at 230 you're dead, and mine was 280. You know, they told my husband, I don't know why she's alive. You know, I didn't want to die. I had three babies in diapers. Well, there was days I did want to die, probably, but I wanted to live for them. I wanted to watch them grow up. You know, I didn't want to die, and that's what alcohol did to me. It was killing me. And so I went to meetings, and I got a sponsor who had a sponsor, and I worked the steps, not right away and not very well the first time. I was 14 months sober before I did the 4 steps. You know, nobody's clocking you. Nobody's timing you. I don't recommend you wait that long. You just prolong your misery, and the 4th and 5th are not that bad, you know. These are the steps to freedom and serenity, you know, and they're just like a staircase. If you want to get to here, you're going to start down here, and you got to take the steps to get to the top. And anyhow, not long after that conversation with my roommate, I read in the paper that they had found a body on the side of the road. Somebody had just found a body, and it was suspicious and blah, blah, blah. Long story short, it was my roommate. She died, and she was out drinking, and she drank too much, and that she, like, passed out and quit breathing. I mean, alcohol poisoning was the autopsy, and the companion she chose for the evening panicked and opened the door and pushed her out instead of calling 911 or anything. So he was just charged with unlawful possession of, or unlawful something with a corpse. Because they determined he didn't kill her, you know. It's just, you know, legally you're not allowed to do things with a corpse. And so the lower companions that we seek, but it was, you know, it was heartbreaking to me. And so I finished that rehab and I came home. And at the beginning, my sister had gone to 90 meetings in 90 days, and then she was over her cravings and she was free. And she's still it. And that works for her. I don't think very well at times. I have watched so many people for the last 14 and a half years quit going to meetings because they were okay. They didn't feel like drinking anymore. They got busy. Alcoholics Anonymous will give you a life. Leo mentioned it, you know. Now you have the car, now you have the house, now you have the spouse and the kids, and now you're too busy to go to meetings because you have all that stuff that you got as a result of this program and staying sober, and you get too busy. And let me tell you, with 3 in diapers, I could have, and then 3 in school, and now I have 3 teenagers. I have a lot of excuses to say I'm too busy to come here. You know, I don't crave alcohol anymore. Rarely. I can go to weddings and parties and wine tastings or whatever. We go camping all the time. And it's normal to not drink now. You know, after 2.5 years, that obsession went away. I prayed very much for it to go away. My husband was in the wine business, so I was around it. And we had to go to winemaker dinners back then. He's not in the business anymore. But I wish he was. Anyhow, that's a whole other train track. I'm going to try to stay on this track. But, I mean, I'm just around it. I'm surrounded by family and friends that are normies. And they can go camping, and that's the time that they drink a beer at noon, you know. I couldn't wait to go camping because that was the time that I didn't have to hide it in a coffee cup at noon, because it's legal to drink if you're camping in the middle of the day, you know. And so, we lost the train. See, we got off the wrong train track. Help me out. Where was I going here?
Camping.
Normie. The cravings. Normie, thank you. The cravings, I prayed that I would be, like the big book says, neutral to it, you know, that I knew it was going to be in my home. My husband's a normie. I didn't want to change his old life because I am an alcoholic. And so I really prayed for that neutrality that the big book talks about. And at 2.5 years, you know, I got it. And I do remember the day that I realized that that prayer had been answered for me. And we had had a couple gals over for dinner, and I was unloading the dishwasher the next morning, and there was 3 wine glasses in there. I was like, who drank last night? And my husband's like, you know, Sherry brought a bottle of wine, and we had, and I had not even noticed it. And that was a big day for me because, you know, for so long, I knew who was drinking and what and when and how much. And I could tell you if my husband, he opens a bottle of wine, it lasts 3 or 4 days. You know, he's weird. And, you know, I open a bottle of wine, and I'm like, what is the cork for? Why do you need a cork? And then they sell the fancy corks you can buy. I'm like, what? Who needs a cork? You know, is there really going to be any left once we open this? And so I hadn't even noticed that that anybody had been drinking. And I always knew, you know, if he had opened a bottle of wine, I could tell you where it was in the outside fridge and how much was in it, you know? I mean, I had respect for it. But I remember the day that all of a sudden it was like I didn't notice anybody drinking. And I'm really grateful for that. I really am because, you know, like I said, I'm just a lot, my life is around a lot of normies. My husband, I was very blessed that he, for the first 9 months of my sobriety, he didn't have it in the house. I think he was more scared of me drinking than I was, but he just didn't drink, and that was fine with him. That's how weird he is. You know, it's like, no, that's okay. I just won't have any. Or he'll do the old, no, I don't want a second because I have to get up early in the morning, you know. Or have one beer and it drinks half of it. No, I'm tired. I don't think I'll finish, you know, weird stuff. My brain is not wired like that at all. And, you know, instead of, when I told my husband, you know, you can have it around, I'm fine, you know, it's okay. Instead of spending my life thinking, I wish I could drink like him, I wish I could drink like him, and I wish, you know, he has one glass, and instead of doing that, I chose to look at that as a reminder, a daily reminder of how I don't drink. You know, I don't do that. I don't pour one. I don't leave half of it there to dump out the next morning. So to me, that's a daily reminder of how I don't drink. If I open it, I'm going to drink until I go to bed, you know. And earlier I was starting to say that I haven't had to relapse, and that's not by any means bragging at all. I just, so far, you know, I've done what's been suggested, and one day at a time I've gotten through cravings here and there and through rough patches, a lot of rough patches in life. And I say that because when I first got here, everybody talked about relapsing. It was like everybody had done it, it seemed like. And I remember thinking, oh, if I'm going to relapse, I need to do it before I get my 6-month chip, because that would suck to have to give it back. And then it was like, if I'm going to relapse, I'd got to do it before I'm a year, because that would really suck to give back my 1 year chip. And then pretty soon it was like, oh my God, it would be so awful to give back my 5 year chip, you know. And somebody caught me, actually, I think it was Little Joe, and he's like, that's a reservation. That's like, you have this reservation. And I remembered, like, okay, I can get through anything, but if I lost my husband or if one of my kids died, I'd have to drink. I'd have to drink. So I kept that in my bank, that that was when I had to drink, you know. And then I watched another member in our program bury their child and stay sober. And I watched people bury their husbands and stay sober. And so coming here, for me, on a regular basis, I need it. Just, you know, my powerlessness over alcohol and my life had become unmanageable. That's one thing. But, you know, the alcohol part of it, I'm not saying I'm cured, and I'm not saying by any means that it could never happen. I'm just saying that's not the hard part anymore. You know, if you're new, it gets easier. It gets easier not to drink. It's just one day at a time, one day at a time, and following the suggestions and working these steps, and that part gets easier. But I'm powerless over people, place, and things, and that still makes me crazy. You know, I'm much more likely to drink over being on a phone. Push one for English, push three if you want to, you know, the customer no service stuff on the phone, that gets me so worked up. It's like sometimes I think if there was a screwdriver right here, I would be drinking it. But, you know, my dad gets cancer. I don't need to drink through that. I've watched you people walk sober through all those things, you know, and I share with my sponsees that, you know, our sobriety it's like this tank. We have this gas tank right here, and it needs fuel. And so we go to meetings. That's one way we put fuel in. We talk to our sponsor. We talk to other alcoholics. That's so huge. We read our book. We pray. All these things are constantly, because somebody poked a hole in the bottom of the tank, and it's leaking. It's leaking all the time. And someday, if I quit doing any of those things and putting fuel in my tank, someday at the time is just going to hit. The big book doesn't say if the craving hits. It says when. My tank's going to be dry. And I've watched people with 14 years drink. I've watched them quit going to meetings. I've watched them still going to meetings and drink. But everything else, you know, we can undo the steps. I've seen it said, and I've watched it, you know, people quit going to meetings, they get busy, they get a life outside of Alcoholics Anonymous, which is fine, but I just keep it a priority to do today what I did those first 30 days and what I did those first 90 days, because it worked for the first 90 days, and I've watched people stop doing that stuff and drink, and I've watched people with 20-some years do it, you know. We're not cured, we're not immune. You know, I need to be reminded all the time of what it was like. I don't ever want to forget what it was like. You know, I need to talk about it and share it, because as soon as I forget, I'm going to say, oh, it wasn't that bad. Oh, I haven't had a drink for 14 years. I bet I could have just one now, you know. And to take that a step further, I was sharing with someone the other day, I don't say I'm never going to drink. I say I'm not going to drink today, but I have already decided when I am going to drink. When my 90th birthday, if this beat up old body, and if you knew what my body had been through, that's a whole nother train track too. If I'm still kicking at 90, I'm going to be ready to go. And so I've just decided, you know what, for my 90th birthday, I'm going to have a glass of wine and see what happens, you know. I know it'll happen off 3 or 4, and I'll probably have alcohol poisoning, and I'll be dead. But that's why I'm waiting until I'm 90, till I'm ready to go, you know. So anyhow, what else did I want to share with you guys? I don't know. I just, you know, I have a lot of yet. But even though I didn't have that, on the outside, everything still looked good to people, you know. But on the inside, I was sick and I was disgusting to myself. You know, I could be in a room with 800 people and feel alone because I knew that I was the only person at church that had vodka in her Snapple bottle, you know, and, or the only person at church with a hangover, or the only mom at playgroup that had vodka in the Jack in the Box soda cup. You know, I mean, I if I was awake, I was drinking. And I seemed to carry it very well because a lot of people didn't know, but I knew. And I was sick and I didn't like it. I hated the sneaking around. I adored this man that I had finally met after 33 years. And I hated that I had this secret from him. I hated that I had this secret. Turns out it wasn't that big of a secret. He knew a lot more than I thought he did, and that was shocking to me. I remember after 2 weeks of rehab, he had told me that I had to stay for 2 weeks. And that's all I would agree to, 2 weeks. I didn't know he had already paid for 30 days. He just said, okay, 2 weeks. He's a very wise man. And I called him after 12 days, and I said, I hope you don't mind, but I think I want to stay the second 2 weeks. And he's like, okay, you know. And then I find out later he'd already paid for it. I said, and there's something else, is I have a bunch of it hidden in the house, and I want you to dump it out. He's like, okay. I go, okay, there's a bottle on the second cupboard behind the placemats. And he's like, I already got that one. I said, okay, above the oven, behind the something or other, there's a bottle. He goes, I already got that one. And I'm like, okay, in the twins' room, in their pajama drawer, I already got that one. Oh, my God, I was shocked. And I said, okay, in our bathroom, in the tampon box. He goes, oh, I didn't know about that one. So he dumped them all out, and, you know, I started wanting, I wanted what you had. I was very baffled that you all sat around here not drinking for a long time, and you seemed to be happy about that, and you laughed, and, I could picture not drinking a long time, but I thought it was going to be a really long, boring life, and I would just be like this, you know, especially at the weddings and the camping and all this stuff, you know. But I started to want what you had because you seemed to be able to still have fun. And, you know, I just one day at a time, I started doing the things they suggested I do, and I still do it now. And I remember being in Bakersfield on my 7th birthday, and I listened to a speaker, so I stole this from him. But he said that, he goes, I don't know if it's just going to meetings that keeps me sober. He said, I don't know if it's just the step work and the work I do with my sponsor that keeps me sober. He goes, maybe it's just God that keeps me sober. Maybe God's just chosen that you get to stay sober. You know, maybe it's reading the big book. He said, but all I do know is that I don't want to quit doing any of those and find out which one it was. You know, and that's where I am. I don't want to quit doing anything different than I did those first 90 days because it worked in the first 90 days and it's still working now. And I haven't had to relapse, like I said, yet. Oh, I know one of my tracks I lost there was one of the old-timers, Barry. Old-timer Barry had said to me that, oh, my gosh, I thought I saw the train track. What was I talking about? What did he tell me? I don't know. I guess it wasn't that good. It was pretty good, actually. I remembered it for 14 years, and Barry told me, oh, I know. I was like, well, everybody, something about relapsing. I was talking to him or something. He's like, you know what, honey, relapse doesn't have to be part of your story. Yeah. You know? And I really remembered that. I thought, okay, maybe it doesn't have to be part of my story. And I finally was able to let go of that, you know, reservation I had that I got to hurt. And, you know, if it is part of your story, that's your story, and that's the path that you're on. But you're here now, and you're here today, and it doesn't have to be part of the rest of your story. You know, we can't go back our life is like this book, and we can't go back and rewrite the beginning, but we can start today and rewrite the end, you know? So if you're here today, relapse doesn't have to be part of your story. We're not asking you to never drink again. We're saying don't drink today. You know, Leo said it, ask in the morning, God, don't let me drink today at night. Thank you for not letting me drink today. And there's been days at 12 years, I remember calling my sponsor at 10:30 at night from another state. I really, really, really want to drink. And I just, you know, settled on maybe tomorrow, but not tonight. Get a movie playing, she said. Get your book. Go to bed. Just go to bed and close your eyes. I went to bed, woke up the next day. It was gone, and I didn't have to. So one day at a time, welcome to the newcomers, and I won't keep you till 8:15 because I'm at a loss for words.
Can we have another round of applause for Denise?